Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugalpil peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombameri, Noonuckle and Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you, and welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country via the National Indigenous Radio Service, and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, I think it's the first night without a shower of rain. First night in the last year or so. Nah, not any gammon really. First night in the last couple of weeks anyway. But it's blue sky and sunshine and it's a beautiful day. And I've got Chris Graham on the line for a quick chat about the change of leadership in the Northern Territory government. Got a black man as the first head of state. America took, they've got a black man as the head of the country, the head of a nation. We've got our first black man as head of state. Chris, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good, Tucker Miles, good.
You're in Darwin at the moment?
Yes, I am, yes. And predicted on your radio station on Monday, I think it was, that Adam would be all right. He'd just have to wait a few months.
He waited a few days and took it out.
Days.
Yes, well done. Now, you also mentioned on Monday you're a very good friend of Adam. You've known him for some time. So, what are your thoughts? He's a First Nations man. Who's his mob? Where's he from?
Look, he's New South Wales. I'm not exactly sure where he's from. His dad was worked on a building site, and he was actually killed on the building site while he was working. So Adam lost his dad fairly early. His wife is Tamara Giles. She's Bunjalung from New South Wales as well. And he's grown up a Waifula, so you know he's always known where he's come from. I mean, ironically, then he ends up in the Northern Territory, but
with the Country Liberal CLP, more ironically.
Yeah, indeed. Well, yeah.
And now he's their leader.
Yeah, he is. It's very historic. I mean, as you say, it's the first Nations head of state that Australia's ever had. It's also historic for the territory because it's the first chief minister from Alice Springs. They've always traditionally come from Darwin. They call it the Berrima Line, which is a reference to Berrima being one of the southern suburbs of Darwin. Apparently no money ever escapes past Berrima, but I think...
I thought it was in reference to blacks, the Berrima Line, that no blacks ever escaped north of the Berrima Line. They kept them south.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a prison in Berrima.
And there's Berrima Prison. Yeah, exactly.
There is a line about that as well, and it's a reference to the Berrima Prison, which is populated by about 90% black fellas. So.
Yes. So that's quite unusual then to have somebody come in from Alice Springs. His electorate is Alice Springs.
Yeah, very, very unusual. The best they've ever done in terms of an Alice Springs representative is deputy, and that was the woman who quit last week, Robin Lamley. She was a deputy. She's from Central Australia. So I think there's four Central Australian MLA seats, and then there's, you know, the MLAs from the bush as well. But, in the 31 or 2-year history of the Northern Territory, actually 40-year history of the Northern Territory, they've never had a chief minister from Central Australia. So... It's very historic in that sense, but of course they've never had a black fella in the job either. So not just there, but anywhere in the country.
Now he did. There was a challenge only a week or so ago where he failed to have the numbers. But what changed? Are people and the was it Mills? I think Terry Mills, the former chief.
The former chief minister.
Chief minister.
Yeah, look, poor old Mills.
What happened to him? What did he do wrong?
Well, the first thing he did wrong was get on a plane and go to Japan this week.
Oh, yes,
that was a big mistake. he's been speared on the phone while he's in Japan. He's flying home today, I think. But
I won't bother coming home now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Look, as you say, I'm in Darwin. I actually sat and had a beer with Adam on Monday night. And I asked him about it. And look, as far as I know, can tell you, the numbers in the party room seem to be split at about 7-7. Adam had 7, he needed 8, and there were 7 opposed to him, or 7 backing Mills. Something's happened in the last day or so, and actually I had a view of him on Tuesday night, not Monday night. Something's happened in the last day or so, and 4 people have changed their vote. As I understand it, he ended up with 11 of the 14 votes in the party room, and obviously Mills is going to vote for himself, so 2 other people backed Mills. Who they are, we don't know yet. I don't know, Tiger. I know he was hitting the phones on Tuesday night trying to work out what the numbers are, and the reason why he spilled, or why they called the spill, is Mills, Terry Mills is very, very unpopular for a leader who just led the party to a pretty resounding victory 6 months ago. He's managed to make himself incredibly unpopular in 6 months. Things like jacking up the power prices and, I mean, there's been all sorts of local political problems here, but generally speaking, Mills is very on the nose. And the party got worried. So Giles saw his opportunity and got him.
I suppose what went well, the difference was with Mills being away, makes it a little easier maybe. But anyway, that's the situation
there.
Yeah,
look, I don't know. It's a funny one. I mean, Alison Anderson, I think we discussed this on Monday, Tiger. Alison was... is the MLA for the neighbouring seat of McDonnell in Alice Springs. She was dumping all over Adam in the media last week. She's calling him a childish boy and saying that he had the deputy's job lined up but he wanted more and he'd have to get, you know, he could have had it and he buggered it up. And whether or not she's changed her vote, I don't know. But whether or not her public comments... and they were pretty bitter public comments about Adam, have changed the mind of 4 other MLAs. I don't know. Alison may have backed him in the long run, but I think also her really quite nasty attack maybe caused some of the 7 who were siding with Mills to have a rethink. Mm. And whatever happened, I saw Adam on Tuesday night, and he told me that, you know, he was circumspect about it and what have you, but I expected that something would happen maybe Thursday, and something happened the very next day. His colleagues came to him and said, we want you to be the Chief Minister. So he had the numbers. They called the ballot, and that was it.
Very good. What do you think might change? What do you expect up there?
Look, well, hopefully there'll be a ministerial change. Alison Anderson is the Minister for Aboriginal Advancement, but she's sort of the only person she's been really advancing in the last few years of her representation is herself, and she's been very random and done some very silly things. So with any luck, the ministries will be shuffled around. I don't know who would get Aboriginal Advancement. There's been some talk that it might be John Elfrink. I don't know. It might remain Alison Anderson. But I think a reshuffle would be good for First Nations people in the Territory. I don't know. Adam, I think he'll be an interesting Chief Minister. He's pretty sharp, but he's not going to turn around and redress the balance between black and white in the Territory. He talks about governing for all territories, and that's what he'll do. He's not going to be there's not going to be a decisive switch in Aboriginal affairs policy, which, you know, if there's not, I'll be disappointed, but I can guarantee it's not going to happen. He's part of a party process, and, you know, if you make that sort of massive switch in no space of time, you'll be out of government quick as look at you in the Territory. So I think you'll just... His profile will obviously increase, and he's a good talker, and he's good at doing the numbers, obviously.
Mm.
But in terms of will we see massive shifts in policy, I don't think so. I think what we will see is a greater focus on economic development in First Nations communities, because that's his mantra.
Good. That'll be a massive change, a massive shift. That's what we're needing. We're needing to establish better economic independence and stuff, and economic opportunities. So if he's focused on that, that'd be a good move. A reshuffle of ministers would be good. Yeah.
Yeah, and look, he was talking earlier in the week about what they're doing on Tiwi Islands, building a port, opening the area up for development. That's the sort of stuff that floats his boat. So hopefully we'll see a bit more of that. But if people are expecting the first black fella to be focused on blackfellas, they're going to be very disappointed, because he's not.
Well, he can't afford to be. Like you say,
he's not going to take that political risk.
Exactly. No, there's party. He's part of the party, and he's got to play the game. Just like in the US, the black president over there, he's playing the game. He hasn't made massive changes for people of colour over there.
No, in fact, and he's still got Guantanamo Bay open, and he's still using drones to kill innocent women and children. So
yes,
he's just like George Bush. I don't think Adam has any drones, so I don't think he'd give mom innocent women and children. But look, he won't be. I think a lot of blackfellas here are looking at it and thinking, well, that's fantastic. Finally, we got someone. That's true. Finally, we have. But Adam is not going to be the Che Guevara of leaders in the Northern Territory. He'll govern carefully. And yes, there'll be an increased focus on First Nations people, and that's a good thing. But don't expect a massive shift, certainly not overnight.
Yes, yes, no. None of us expect massive shifts from anybody. Anyway, mate, thanks for joining us every day.
You would?
Yeah, you'd lose your job the next day. You know that. You'd lose your job the next day.
I would, but I'd burn it all down on the way out, Tiger.
All right. Listen, enjoy your time in the Territory.
Thanks, mate.
I'll talk to you later. Thank you very much for your time with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Yeah, pleasure, mate.
Bye now. Chris Graham. As you heard, we were on air on Monday talking about it. And thought that Adam had burned his bridges there for a while. He'd have to bide his time, Adam Giles. But the next day he's organising things, and 2 days later he's the man, the first First Nations man to lead a government in this country. My real guest today, live in the studio, is First Nations woman Kerry Charlton. Kerry, how are you?
Good, going all right, Tiger.
Welcome to the studio. It's good
to have you
here.
Ah, good to be here.
And your first time in the building too, in the doors. You didn't even know where to find
how
to
find
us. In the
new building,
Yeah, you didn't even know how to find us. I just think, everybody knows where we are now, so sorry about that.
No, that's all right. I'm just used to driving up Fairfield Road and...
Yeah, up to Yeronga Pilly.
Yeah, the old one.
Yes. Yes, I never thought to tell you. But, Kerry, tell us your mob, your country.
All right, well, I'm a Gurunpul Yagara woman from Stradbroke Island and the wider Brisbane area, also Yindambi up the coast, so I'm pretty well traditional to the Quandamooka area and the wider Brisbane coastal, right up to Nambour, down to the Logan River.
Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up mostly between Brisbane and Bayside, Sandgate, and with my mother and father for a little while, and then down to Stradbroke Island. But also spent time out west, out Roma, and back to Straddy, you know.
You was a freshwater Murray for a while, were you?
I was a freshwater Murray there, and I always had a little joke with Laurie Nielsen that he was one of the fellas that used to pull my hair out there at the little river Tent City, we used to call it.
I reckon he must have been a terrible, terrible kid, that bloke. I reckon he was that, Laurie Nielsen. He's still a character. He's a real joker. You know, he's a good guy.
Of course.
You walk in here and see his artwork everywhere, the emus and stuff he's got
stuff.
Painted.
Yeah, great stuff.
He's a great artist, but I reckon he would have been great at that sort of thing, upsetting you girls and things as a kid.
You
can just imagine it, you know.
So I'm tangled myself up here. But, yeah, I had family doing ring barking and working out there, uncles and old granny and a couple of others. And, Yeah, so as the work opportunities rose, you know, Mum went out there for a while and us kids and, yeah, lived in a little tent somewhere out there.
Yeah, yeah.
By the dump.
Either by the dump or by the river.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, between the two.
All right. Now, you are the acting coordinator for the... I haven't even got the right page. Where am I? Here we are, Kerry Charlton on today, Queensland Churches Together, Indigenous Peoples Partnership. What is Queensland Churches Together?
Well, they're an organisation which is made up of member churches, and there's about 12 or 13 at the moment, and of numerous churches and working ecumenically. And one of the...
That word, ecumenically, what does that mean, ecumenically?
I knew you'd ask that,
yeah,
and, I didn't look up the dictionary about it.
Well, you tell me early that ecumenical means working together with the different denominations.
Well, that's right. It's working across the different Christian faith groups, so across the denominations.
Protestants and Catholics?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
And sometimes also working with other faith traditions as well.
All right.
You know, there's a couple of multi-faith centres and projects and programs going. So, you know, QCT is involved in some way with some of those.
That's probably, that is a good thing, because for too long, and I don't know when this started, I'll ask you to tell us when did that begin, but for too long they were their own little separate entities and often, well, it just makes sense that they'd come together and work together, particularly for in the interest of First Nations people.
Well, I think so. I think something we need to understand is First Nation people have been ecumenical people for a long time, particularly post-colonialism and during the era of government administration and incarceration on the missions and reserves, and the churches had a lot of activity in being carriers of that. It depended on what mission you were on, what church you were. But as we get together, our Indigenous spirituality comes through, and so the walls of church denomination aren't probably as visible and prevalent as we're sitting dialoguing together. Yes, ecumenical is about working together and seeing our differences, accepting our differences, and working out how to be inclusive of that.
When was the Queensland Churches Together formed? Well, it was 1993, I see on the pamphlet there, but I thought you might tell me. But I'll tell
All right,
you.
So you're it's... talking about CTIP.
Is that CTIP?
Which is what I'm working on.
Churches Together, our
Indigenous Peoples Partnership.
That was 93.
Yes.
What was before this Queensland Churches Together? I mean, there was the Australian Council of Churches and there was Catholic something or other. I mean, there's Justice Committee or something or other.
Yes.
There's been a long history.
Yes.
Of engagement.
Yes.
In a formal sense with First Nations people by churches.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the World Council of Churches came out of, I'll apologise first if I'm a bit inaccurate, but...
people are used to that on here with me.
Oh,
I'm
that's
always
good.
Inaccurate, so it's all right, you know, you're okay. And I never apologise for it.
Well, that's good, but post the Second World War and, you know, the relocation and... part of the responding to particularly the Jewish peoples.
Mm.
And, you know, and I'm very proud also to say that Aboriginal people did send submissions to the United Nations and to governments about the plight of the Jewish nation during the war, because they could see where it was heading in the early days, because we'd been through incarceration and all sorts of things.
I think it was William Patton, wasn't it? Jack Patton, William Cooper.
Yes.
William Cooper, William Ferguson.
Yes, yes.
Back in those
group,
guys in the 30s.
Right.
Yes.
So, anyway, the World Council of Churches, and then, that came into Australia and the Australian Arms, and then the State Arms developed out of that. And CTIP, which is Churches Together Indigenous Peoples Partnership, started in 1993 by a small ecumenical group. And prior to that was the Aboriginal and Islander Catholic Council and other groups who loosely, I suppose, were members of AICC, because we were all developing. It was just post the referendum and things were in that transition, coming out from missions, coming out from being in reserves, having some freedom of, a bit more freedom of speech and choice and
movement.
Mm. And the AICC, with people like, Raylene Baker's mother, Aunty Eileen Broderick, and Aunty Janie Arnold, and quite a few others, some of the Stratty people, and all over. There's so many names, I can't go into them, but lots of wonderful people, and the Brisbane group particularly were very active in holding the community meetings and looking at justice for our people in terms of police treatment and police relations. And the AICC was quite active in having the police awareness and training out at the academy, Oxley Academy. Mm. That all came out of those community meetings. So there was a lot of on-the-ground community-driven work that moved things for us up here, and a lot of things that then became policy and now just a part of government. But that came out of a lot of church groups who had support of, individual clergies and churches.
They're a powerful lobby group, the churches.
Yes.
Most premiers and prime ministers are quite influenced by what a particular church or church collective, what they think.
Yes.
Of their policies and how they act and what they do.
That's right.
So we have to have dialogue. We have to be a part of it. Now, this question, my question is, the churches are responsible for running the reserves and missions, setting them up in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
They worked hand in hand with the government at the time. So they're responsible for removal of children and a lot of hardship, a lot of trauma that a lot of our people still carry today. Yet our mob, back in the mob people that you named, saw the need then, a couple of generations back, to engage with the churches. I mean, how forgiving are our mob?
That's right.
The compassion.
Right. That's right.
To not carry that bitterness that the churches did this to our mob, did this to me as an old person a couple of generations back. That's quite admirable. Not admirable, it's not the right word, but it's amazing for our old people, for our mob to be that forgiving.
I think the spirit of, the spirit that moves within us, and, we say Nari Babing Wanjina for, the Most High God and the Holy Spirit. And I think that whatever we, wherever we come from, we're in our spirituality as Aboriginal and Islander people, we have that spirit within us. We had it here. We have been created by the one creator.
We acknowledge believe in a creator spirit.
That's right.
Yes,
and
yes.
We've
got different names.
And that's right. And in our stories and in our creation stories, but all our stories to teach us how to treat each other, treat the country, treat the land, where to go, where not to go. There were also stories about treating each other respectfully. Respect was our relationships and respect go together. They're inexplicably intertwined, And, you know, I think our old people could see and respected what church was trying to do. Mm. And individuals, there are enough individuals, I think, who helped build those bridges and could treat our people humanely. And I think and that's because the relationships were there, and that helped. And I'm not saying everyone has the same view as me, because they don't. And many people have been so very hurt and, you know, sick by it and carry that trauma.
That's right, carry that hurt that makes them sick. They are sick from it, yes.
So, you know, it's that two-edged sword. It's like it's a paradoxical relationship with churches, you know.
But that spirituality is important. I mean, for balance in our lives,
yes.
It must be. Now, whether we call that creator spirit Bayami, Wangina, or God, or Buddha, or whatever, it's important that we have that belief system, or that we do acknowledge a higher power or creator spirit.
Yes.
Do you think there's a void?
That's fundamental to AA, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you must, to move forward and come out of where you are, you've got to come to a place to acknowledge and understand there's a higher power than us. So.
One of my daughters goes to church, and it's quite unusual in my family for a member of the family to be going to church. Because my grandmother, Granny Watson, was a strict Catholic, real strict Catholic. And the priest used to come to the house too, because when she got a bit older and couldn't get to church, they'd come to the house for her and do the service and things, everything there, you know. It was deadly. But she was a very strict Catholic, and I just think she might have been on. There's not very many in my family that go to church, but one of my daughters goes, and she says, "Dad, it's great." And she knows the language and dances and stuff like this, you know, a lot of the culture, strong in her own culture.
Mm.
But said, "Oh, look, it's just great, the fellowship and the people, and it's a good feeling and all this stuff. I love it. I love it."
Mm.
So it can serve different purposes and then have different meanings for different people.
Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, we are... Indigenous peoples are very spiritual people, and you know, we are people of the dreaming. We very much receive dreams and visions, and a lot of dance comes out of that. A lot of performance. Look at this. Look at where we're sitting here. Yeah. This must have been a dream once for you, sitting in that riverbank out there in Whoopa 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 Land. And you know, my great grandfather was called Grandfather Mookin, and his sister was Granny Janie Sunflower, and there was a kinship connection with Grandfather Willie McKenzie, and so they're all well-known names for this area, and they were the old people who were at time incarcerated on Cherbourg, but they kept the culture going, and so they're in a lot of the photos with the Cherbourg people, the Cubby Cubby people, and some of the Yugambeh people, and the Waka Waka, and others. And my great-grandfather couldn't read or write, but he could speak English well. You know, us Stradbroke Island mobs or the Quandamooka peoples learned to speak English early because of the penal colony and what happened, the history in the bay. And so we learned early to mix it that way. But at the same time, the underground movement of cultural maintenance and ceremonies was continuing. And that old great-grandfather, he was also a message stick bearer, and he would take the message stick around. And the priest at the mission realised this and asked him, would he help him teach Bible study to the people? And so grandfather said yes, you know, and made a deal with him that he would listen in, and he did get converted to Christianity. Now, this is a very strong ceremony man. Spoke the language, everything. And what he then did was decided that he wanted to be taught four books of the Old Testament, of the old prophets, and particularly in the book of Ezekiel, where it talks about the... sticks, which symbolise two of the nations or two of the tribes. of the Jewish Israel nation. And grandfather, when he heard those stories, he said to the priest, "Ah, we've got message sticks too. Ah, we have that. Oh, we move around the country like that." And the there were so many connections for him that he had that priest teach him until he memorized four of the books of the Old Testament. And I mean that's just come down. So he was able to blend the two into his spirituality, and he still continued doing ceremony and the corroboree and speaking languages, and continued with his personal faith journey with the Christian faith.
So there's a lot that we can relate to in the Bible, the Bible stories, the different stories there.
And even what Jesus taught. I mean, I could never understand.
He shared his bread and wine just like our mob are still doing down Musco Park.
Different spirits maybe, but but the thing is also, in terms of that, some of the stories in the New Testament, our people are very generous people. We know how to share. We know how to look after each other, forgive. I mean, the disruption with colonization has certainly, corrupted us, or perhaps distorted some of the behaviours due to people's coping mechanisms. And but, for me, there's a lot of our culture. So I could never understand why our culture and spirituality was labelled as evil and shouldn't be spoken about, and the burning of our artifacts and all sorts of things that have happened in the past.
Seemed to be a part of paganism or something was the term, I think, wasn't
that's it?
Yeah.
That's him.
Very
sad. Yeah. Hmm. So CTIP endeavours to build a real partnership and build bridges between with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Christians, between them, and also with other churches. So building on helping build that understanding and awareness, but also advocating for justice, promoting healing, reconciliation, and justice.
Let's talk about some of those activities. We'll take a short break and talk about some of those, the focus of the organisation, justice and healing and reconciliation and things. Kerry Charlton is my guest, live in the studio, First Nations woman from Quandamooka country, and we'll take a short break for a song by Kev Carmody. It just happens to be Comrade Jesus Christ. What are your thoughts on that one, Kerry? Yes, that's the JC that I can certainly relate to.
Oh, deadly, eh? Kev Carmody.
Kev Carmody.
Gosh, yes. Listened to that for 20 years, or since it was recorded anyway.
Yeah, well, that's 30 years or more back.
Yeah, yeah. When we used to have the, Murray Radio was only, what?
Murray, yeah.
One hour Saturday mornings, yeah, and we'd all rush home and make sure we were sitting there for it.
They were the days. We've come a long way.
Yes, wonderful. And I think Kev has nailed it very well on the head.
He has, eh?
Yep. Yeah.
Tell us some of the activities in relation to reconciliation, justice,
okay,
issues like that.
Well, I just omitted to also to just acknowledge Joan Hendricks was the first coordinator and as the CTIP coordinator and certainly shaped their role and the relationships with the churches and took it to a quite good established level. And the past couple of years, Paula Coghill was also a coordinator, and I'm just acting at the moment in Georgia Corowa's place, who's on maternity leave. And so, hello, Georgia, if you're listening with your new little bub. Out of the work of the previous coordinators, every year they have an annual service of reconciliation, Queensland churches together, and heads of churches and a lot of the clergy and interested people attend that. And that's this year we're going to be having one in the city, and also in Logan, and one at Ipswich. And it's to pray, you know, it's a prayer service, but it's also raising some awareness and educating people and just bringing people together, and also praying for the, you know, just for comfort, strengthening, and obviously a reconciliation, and displaying and celebrating our contributions to church and what we have to offer in our spirituality. And so we have, you know, traditional dances. Sometimes it's the traditional owner groups, but sometimes it's from the schools, the youth, the young people, and highlighting their up-and-coming skills. And also, you know, we have Torres Strait Islander involvement and performers and singers as well, or speakers. So that will be happening in starting Reconciliation Week in May. And so for that week of reconciliation, there will be three services. And also some of the other things that happen would be going out and giving presentations and talks to training clergy in training, summer schools, out to churches, bringing in different guest speakers from amongst the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander clergy.
In the way of cultural awareness type thing? Or just understanding First Nations?
Some of that, yes, understanding First Nations, but also really getting into depth around some theological points of view and, you know, talking theology from the Guri heart, so to speak, and mind. And also, you know, for some people, for some church people, and this is from my years of, you know, nearly 30 years being involved in this sort of work with community and churches. There certainly is misunderstandings and certainly ignorance. And certainly sometimes I can actually see operating the ignorance and the attitudes from the very early days towards our culture and our people. And so that just tells me there's more work to be done and more bridges to build.
You've got to be congratulated. You've been doing this for 30 years?
Just
with
about.
This mob, with this mob?
No, no, not just with this mob.
No, not with this mob,
but in this area,
in the
yes.
In the Christian sense.
Yes, well.
Church sense, yeah. That's a pretty big effort.
You see,
I mean, that's a long time. You can certainly hang in there.
Well, I might have it wrong. What's 93? Yes, yeah. We. Well, actually, we started out, you know, CTIP started it formed by a small ecumenical group in 93.
Mm. But you involved.
But in
that.
The 80s, yeah. We were doing, we had the ecumenical group in Inala, and we had some of the lovely old elders come with us out to the schools to share their culture, share their stories. Children were just fascinated, you know, with the old aunties and uncles who did a bit of talking and storytelling and all of that. So, you know, yes, when you say it like that,
well, I
forget
mean,
how old I'm getting.
Yeah, well, you must have started out a 10-year-old or something by the look of things. But there has to be the frustrations. There has to be the challenges along the way.
Oh,
because
yes.
It's tough. Back in 30 years ago, it was tough times, and it's still tough talking to some of these people today.
Oh, yes, yes.
But
and
there's
some
obviously
of the groups,
some ground being made.
There's
obviously,
well, if CTIP's sitting there.
Exactly.
And
yes.
CTIP, one of their little mantras is Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and non-Indigenous Christians walk about Queensland together, you know. And that, when I'm saying we started out back in the 80s, well, people were doing it before us.
Exactly.
You know, like
that's
my
right.
great-grandfather
right.
and
yes.
like the
that's
people
right.
I spoke of earlier. And it was the churches who helped people to get somebody out of jail or send support letters or...
Well, look at the role Catholic education played way back in the
yes.
50s and 60s.
Yes, yes.
They had a real commitment to justice,
yes.
you know, a sense of justice.
Yes. yes.
And they did a far better job in the education system than the department, than the state schools did, a far better job.
And
I think it's well documented.
You look at Brisbane, you know, you just in terms of Brisbane and in the 60s and people like Darcy Cummins and others who were doing the tutoring. I mean, I was a recipient of that when I came off the island and Uncle Jim Hamilton would pick us all up and take us over to Holy Rosary and we'd be getting tutoring and, you know, that
Don
sort of thing.
Pastor Don Brady.
Now, when we talk about churches, look at that. Yeah, Don Brady and the movement that come out of him and his church. Now, at the time, I think it was very contentious.
In Red Hill?
Sort of.
The one at Red Hill? It was. Well,
and he wasn't backward in coming forward.
He wasn't.
But we lived at in a boarding house at South Brisbane when we came off up from Stradbroke. And it wasn't, you know, it was Manhattan Walk, and it had the Adelaide Hotel near the Plough Inn, the Ship Inn. And Pastor Don we'd all go up there on the Sunday afternoon and have fellowship, and he'd do a bit of preaching, teaching. And, you know, he wasn't backward and forward. If he had to lay someone out sometimes, they got laid out, you know.
The punch and pastor. Yes.
So, yes. And, I mean, I have, you know, I'm a mother of three and a surrogate mum to a few more. I'm a grandmother of 10. And I'm going to have my first great-grandchild next month.
There you go. You look way too young to be a great-grandmother.
Oh, thank you. You know, must be that deadly sunlight soap and moopy-moopy par water there. Must have done it. But you know, for me, spirituality, you know, I had my grannies and the old grandfathers and many what I would call speaking positively into my life and sowing good seed into my life
and
all of us. But also staying true. I mean, we go to church Sunday morning at the little St. Mark's there at Dunwich, and then in the afternoon, if Grandfather Mackenzie was down and Granny Janie, they'd be doing dance and teaching us language songs and dance down by the creek, and then we'd be off out to the, you know, racing for the swim and the oysters and things like that. So, and I think that being on country is a really big part, you know, of being, getting your spirit
that
strong,
balance. That
you know,
balance.
And that balance.
So identity and culture and all that's essential in the makeup of who we are and what we are.
And then for people who have taken the Christian road, to have fellowship with other Christians is wonderful. And I fellowship with Indigenous and non-Indigenous. And I'm just remembering what you said about your daughter and the gift it is, you know, enhancing her life.
Mm.
And where churches are courageous enough to allow us to express ourselves in our way, to have our dig music or, you know, clapsticks and our artefacts, etc., it can become a very rich experience for everyone. And that's also part of what we try to do is talk to churches about how to do a, you know, a culturally appropriate funeral, how to do a culturally appropriate gathering.
Talking about grandkids and that, my grandson, I should have mentioned earlier, turned 14 today, young Tiger. He's too big to fit into my clothes these days. 14 today he is.
And you're shrinking?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I thought I'd better shrink a bit if I want to see more of these grandkids. I've got a great-granddaughter who's 8 months old or so.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, isn't that beautiful?
If I want to see more of these kids growing up and be around for them to support them, he's at Nudgee College, just his first year, full boarding, and he loves it. So he's 14 today, so I better say happy birthday to him, the big fella.
Yep.
And he loves it, loves it. He does. There's about 80 Murrays out there.
That's amazing. And they come down from North Queensland, Northern Territory, all over.
All around.
Yes,
there's
some good people out there.
Yes, Yvonne O'Neill's fantastic. You know, she's a First Nations woman out there. And gee, she does a great job. Yvonne does a great job looking after those kids.
They're fabulous. And, you know, when you asked about changes, look at that.
That's right, look at that.
And I worked with the Christian Brothers for full-time for nearly 9 years. And in each of the states we had cohorts and in similar positions, either with schools or with the organisation. And one of the directions, our strategic directions, was just that, to increase the Indigenous population and policies that were inclusive and also could accommodate Indigenous needs. We worked on that for many, many years. And so it gives me quite satisfaction to hear how the... Because when you're at that level, you don't often see the fruit, so to speak, of the works, but to see it ongoing and increasing.
When you move on and you look back and reflect some 5 or 10 years later, you can see that some of the things you planted the seed or may have been involved with.
Well, when I, by the time I left the policy, we had the policies drafting and the principals were certainly on side and people are just great in the schools, you know, and when you get those individuals who've just got that energy and the Catholic social teaching is just one of the best in the world. I think it's recognised worldwide.
I want to talk ways with you that idea of mine to see where we can get some wheels under it, seeing you've got such good contacts. I mean, you've probably got a line straight to the man himself up there, better than me. I'm talking to the bloke down below. He's trying to drag me down there. But look, all jokes aside, the churches and property, excess property. You drive around country towns, as I do on occasion, I see old churches and church properties that don't seem to be getting used anymore, could be sold off and probably end up being sold off. My hometown theatre, they sold off the convent school. That property, there must be probably 2 or 3 acres of land there and the building and stuff. That was sold off. I spoke about it on air here last week, already this week. I'm thinking it would be great for each state, a collective of churches like this one, churches together, Queensland churches together. If this excess property was sold off and put in an investment account and a trust established where the interest off that investment was accessed for the funerals of First Nations people in each state. Now, the churches, I think, have some degree, quite a degree of responsibility and obligation to, and as you've already acknowledged, working towards justice and reconciliation and awareness and stuff. And I just think it would be a great project for the collective, churches collectives in each state to establish an account, or an investment account. And we're not sort of taking money out of their bank account or asking them to give us money now, but I would like to see any property sold off that the proceeds go into an investment account. A black trustee set up, trustees, and they would determine or would administer that interest that would be a funeral fund for our mob. What are your thoughts? You reckon we'd go anywhere with that?
Look, I think that...
It needs to be written up by someone smart enough that's been writing policy for a long time, you know. It needs to be written up and worded properly.
I think that... it's a logical progression with thoughts and to that it would be a viable project. I mean, I don't know what the churches would say, but I'm sure there are some who would be on side because of their work that they've done with us. In terms of... I just lost my thought then. I've been writing little diagrams while you were talking, but and the funerals, for me, there is an issue around the multiple and premature deaths that are happening and that families are suffering multiple grief, multiple loss. My family alone, we had 5 deaths in 3 years, you know, my sister, my cousin, brother.
Well, we're always making announcements of funerals and stuff
and
here.
And you know, my son is a pastor up in Rocky and he had to stop doing funerals for a little while because he'd, in a matter of 8 months, had done, you know, 30 funerals. And I know, Alex Gator with the Walkabout Ministry, and I know Murray Ministry, Ravina, and others around the country can attest to this, that they're working with, you know, maybe 100 or more funerals and then a couple of hundred people with death and dying. So I honestly
think we could develop something here, work on something?
I think to get that conversation moving certainly is timely. I know what I was going to say. Some churches did benefit from parcels of land allocated to them over many years, and have built on that. Some haven't, but I think that when you look into Aboriginal history and Torres Strait Islander history in this country and understand the role of what happened to our economic base, which was our land, and what was on it.
And our spirituality.
And
that,
our spirituality. And how it has been, you know, dismantled and displaced. And we've ended up in a very sad state in a lot of parts of in our communities. And so this to have something like this, certainly, and with all the legal, you know, T's crossed and I's dotted, I can't see why we couldn't.
Let's look at what we can do with it. It's almost time. It's time to wind up. News is approaching us fast. Let's see what we can do. I'd like to continue talking to you about it and just see where it can go, how it can be written up. But look, thanks very much for coming and joining us today.
You're most welcome.
Good to have you. Been good to have you live in the studio. We'll have to get to show you around the place. And yes, tomorrow's program. Thank you, Kerry. Certainly appreciate you being here.
Thank you, and everyone. Yowoy.
Kerry Charlton joining us this morning, today. Tomorrow's Let's Talk. It's a live broadcast from the Murray School. Tomorrow at the Murray School, they have the Minister, Warren Snowden, will be out there. And he's opening up the clinic, the health service, the health clinic, medical clinic out there. It's part and parcel of the Murray School. AICS, the Aboriginal Islander Community Health Service, our medical centre down over there on Annerley Road at near Woolloongabba, what do they call it? Marta Hill, I think it might be now. Woolloongabba, Annerley? No, it's not Annerley. Anyway, Dutton Park, who knows? That health service has put money into refurbishing the clinic at the school. That clinic at the school serves as a clinic for the community out there. Saves people coming all the way in to into town here. So it will be opened up by Warren Snowden tomorrow. I'll do a pre-recorded interview and probably play it next week. But in the morning I've got people from health services, we've got some students, so we've got a number of people. I think the principal, Philomena Downey, is going to join us for a chat. So we'll do an OB from the Murray School tomorrow morning. Make sure you join us for that one. And you just have a great evening, great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in.